Episode 1230, Ilium Olympos Book Reviews.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Vandy Vonor.
And we are back to talk about two books by Dan Simmons. Ben, we've talked about this before, but since we're here in this episode, just give us your history with this author and tell us everything we need to know before we get to these books, which I think, listeners, maybe we'll do a little non-spoiler, and then we'll go into spoiler at the end.
So my history of Dan Simmons is around the year 2001, 2002, I was reading lots of really, really, really bad sci-fi and fantasy novels. But occasionally along the way, you stumble into something great. So it was right around when Ilium first came out that Dan Simmons caught my eye.
What year would that have been?
2001, I think. Okay. I didn't want to pay for the hardcover. Maybe 2002. Probably 2002. So I went and read another book of his called Hyperion, and loved that.
Love.
And then I read everything else from Dan Simmons, including a bunch of stuff that was out of print and I had to work hard to find. And he's, was one of my favorite authors, and he's now dead.
Just recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, his passing actually kind of pushed me to finally get to these two books, because I've had them in mind for a while, but you had specifically said, and I've mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning it here on this episode. And I think I told you maybe 2 years ago, okay, I'm about to start Ilium.
Yeah.
You're like, hold on. You should definitely read Iliad before you read Ilium.
Yeah.
So if you go over to the Patreon feed, listeners, which you should do, patreon.com/thesci-fi-christian, we did a deep dive on all of Ilium and all of Odyssey. And
The Tempest, that comes
and
into
And The
it
Tempest,
too.
Which comes, and I can't remember, I want to ask about The Tempest, but we'll come back to that. So listeners, this is a must. If you're listening to this and you want to know if we like these books,
we do like these books.
This is a must. You have to read Iliad and Odyssey prior to reading Ilium. To me, it wasn't just a recommendation from you. It was like I would not have understood as well or appreciated the book, but both Ilium and Olympus, if I hadn't read those two books first.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a strong enough novel where, like, I wasn't super familiar with any of them at the time I first read
this. Like it.
But part of it, I think it spurred me to become interested in them. So it can go both ways. But yes, it is a richer experience with that knowledge.
Tempest, same thing. Now, when you recommended Tempest, I can't remember, did you recommend it to me and did we do a deep dive because we had Ilium in mind? Or what made you have us do a 2-week deep dive on Tempest? Was it because of these books?
Don't remember. Maybe.
I kind of think it must have been. Like, why else would you have?
Yeah, I don't know.
The only thing you didn't have me read that I think I would have benefited from was Proust.
That's a higher threshold to clear.
Yeah. So
the other thing you should read, I don't know if you did, but you should read the Browning poem Caliban upon Setipus.
I haven't read that. What's Proust's first name?
Marcel.
Marcel Proust. He's just talk a little bit about his writings.
Well, so in Search of Lost Time or Remembrance of Things Past, it goes under both titles. Is a semi-autobiographical 7-part novel.
When you say 7-part novel, do you mean together they're one novel or they're 7 novels?
It's like Wheel of Time, except not at all like Wheel of Time in terms of plot, but where it's just one continuous story.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you can read them more or less.
So there's 7 novels that are one large story.
One large story.
Okay. I have started that book, but when it was clear I was more on track finishing Ilium and Olympus, I kind of set that one aside.
Yeah, Proust is a lot.
Nothing against Proust. I like to find
it's a heavy commitment.
Yeah.
No, it's really good. We watched, I know, The Life Aquatic. And did you notice Proust in that movie?
Well, only because you told me, but yes.
Yes.
So you just gave me some recommendations that were a must, and it made me really appreciate the experience. Plus, I just have a natural interest in, as you know, Greek and Roman mythology, and that was such a big part of this, and just good sci-fi in general. So it has all these different pieces that put together a good story.
Yeah, I mean, we've previously read Lord of Light, the Roger Zelazny novel. Certainly, that's a big influence on this as well.
You're saying he was inspired by that book?
Oh, for sure.
Has he announced that, or is that just your impression?
I don't think you have to announce all of your influences.
I mean, if you're saying, in some ways, it's not just an influence. It's an idea that he. I mean,
well,
it could be a copy.
The whole concept of the post-humans setting themselves up as gods. It's not a copy in that you know, and if that's a copy, well, so much of the genre is incestuous that way, where you're borrowing ideas from one another. So, but I think that one stands out in that the concept of post-human shows up, but post-human setting themselves up as gods. The obvious reference point is Lord of Light.
Okay. Well, is that post-human thing, is that a spoiler, or can we just dive into
it? It's not a spoiler.
Okay, I can't remember what you know right away and what you don't know. All right, let's just go into spoilers.
All right.
All right, listeners, goodbye.
Goodbye.
We do recommend these books. All right. Take it away. Read this weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean,
I finished that 2 weeks ago.
If you want me to get into spoilers about the plot, I think, you know, and I like the plot, I like the characters. In some ways, that's the least interesting thing to me about the book.
Okay.
Like, I'm much more interested in the themes that Dan Simmons is getting out of this book, the character arcs, and like so much of it is this primordial idea of what does it mean to be human and what happens when you lose that. It's a remarkably prescient book for the AI era, in that we're giving, you know, another corollary you could put in there would be Dune, of giving your thinking over to machines. That happens quite literally in this novel, where our two Morvet characters, who are these robot characters, they've been the preservation of art has been foisted upon to them, and they're great characters.
One of the characters, for example, his mission is to know Proust really well.
Yes,
and it kind of comes off as if he has an interest in it, but I think the implication is he's been programmed to be the keeper of Proust.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then
Shakespeare, the other one likes Shakespeare.
Orfo of Io is specifically Shakespeare's sonnets. And it's great because as the novel begins, and we have the post-humans flying around, and we have some resurrected people, and then we have these old-style humans who are really just pathetic on Earth. And the most human characters in the novel are these two robots who are wandering around. And there's a wonderful theme that's part of that. And the theme is that why are they the most human? It's because they have come in contact and have spent now centuries meditating upon these great works of genius and art. And that art is part of what makes it human. I think that thematically, there's a lot in this book, these two books, that have influenced my thinking in the way that I think about art and the way that I think about what it means to be human. Certainly not independent of other sources, you know, and notably in terms of the second one being theology and a theology of aesthetics or the theology of humanity, all of that comes into it. But at its core, the ideas around both of those that really resonate with me, I think if you've been a constant listener to the Sci-Fi Christian or even an occasional listener over the years, you've probably picked up on them. That number one, art is not just subjective. It's not just a thing that is a matter of personal opinion, but that there is real genius and there is real beauty, and it does actually do something. That art is part of what shapes us and changes us forces us to be more human, that art is an important part of the human experience. It's why, you know, we should be upset when more and more of our art is just consumed into the Disney and Disney-esque machines of our day. It's actually more nefarious than it seems. It's not just, I used to like Star Wars and now it's just Mandalorian and Goo Goo running around. No, it's actually robbing us of our humanity the more and more and more that we give our attention to that as opposed to greatness, which isn't, you know, doesn't mean that you never slum it a little bit. As the great Werner Herzog says, the poet must not avert his eyes as he talks about his love for professional wrestling and other trash TV.
Where did you hear that?
On his autobiography.
Did you read my review of the Hulk Hogan documentary?
No.
Werner Herzog is featured on it. He's one of the talking heads.
That's amazing.
Oh my gosh, I was so happy to see it.
He's such a great man.
It was shocking.
I strongly recommend, as an aside, Herzog's autobiography, and you have to listen to it because you have to hear his voice. But it's the title of it is Every Man for Himself and God Against All. His autobiography. It's so good. It's so good. Anyway, we all slum it sometimes, but yet when slumming it becomes the rule and the primary and then the exclusive just for an entire culture. Like, you see the effects of that, and it's like you go from reading books, and you go from reading books to watching TV, and from watching TV to staring at your phone, and from that to TikToks and all of this. And it's like we've watched in real time over the last two decades the erosion of humanity for reasons that Dan Simmons is highlighting. Mm-hmm. Then the other theme that I think runs really strongly through this book is that to be human means struggle. It means doing hard things. It means engaging and challenging yourself. It means intentional growth. I love the character of Diamond in the first novel, who is literally begins as just this slob and this lecherous. He's in both novels, but his character arc is throughout the first novel, this lecherous, loathsome individual. And by the end of it, he becomes a man. And it's
and in some ways, the hero.
The hero, right. And it's powerful. It's so well done, and it so resonates so strongly. And the key thing to the book is brilliant, I think, is that you can find both those themes independently in other places, but they're actually joined together because it's hard to read Proust, and it's hard to read Shakespeare. And as those of you who have come along with us over the last couple of years, it's hard to read Homer and to read Dante and to read all these things that we're reading. That makes you more human. And like, this is why I pound the table so hard on the all artist subjective, because if all art is subjective, I should just consume the art that entertains me and makes me feel good. But if all art isn't subjective, if beauty is real and the engagement of that beauty actually makes me more of a human and the struggle with it is part of what builds my humanity, then that argument is actually an anti-human argument. And I think that's what implicitly Dan Simmons draws out through these two brilliant novels.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, even though it's broken into two parts, basically just one long story.
Yep.
In fact, where it ends, it doesn't necessarily have to end there. It could end anywhere, really.
There's a little some bit of stylistic time. Differences between the two.
Yeah, that's true. There is. Do you know why he chose that by any chance, behind the scenes?
I don't know. It's not on, like, Hyperion does the same thing. Fall of Hyperion is stylistically different from Hyperion. I think it's an interesting technique. It does make it both parts feel a little bit more distinct.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And so I like it.
So now I've read Hyperion, Fall of Hyperion. I've read what's right after Hyperion. What's
Endymion, Rise of Endymion.
Yep. So I've read those four arcs. Then now I've done Ilium and Olympus.
Yep.
I started Flashback just this last week.
Have you read The Terror?
Nope,
I thought you read The Terror.
I have not read The Terror.
Okay.
But I am coming to ask you for your recommendation. I started Flashback. I don't know. I'm not sure if I like it so far. We texted about it a little bit. It seemed like you think it's still pretty good.
Oh, I really like it.
So give me just a few recommendations. Terror is about, it's a horror. That's a horror book, right?
Not really. There's a monster in it, but it's a historical-ish novel.
Okay.
About two ships, the HMS Terror and the HMS Erebus that got frozen in the ice trying to find the Northwest Passage.
Yeah, I think what
it's probably my favorite book of his.
What I've liked from him has been the future world, kind of him. There's, you know, it's thematically rich, but with sci-fi.
Yeah.
Tell me some more, like, similar to that, either by him or other authors.
So you've read most of his sci-fi stuff.
Okay.
The Hollow Men has a little bit of sci-fi in it. You know, he's written some horror that I don't think you would like because you're not a horror guy. And then he has some good thriller type stuff. I do think The Terror is a must read. I really like Flashback. I think Flashback has some really interesting ideas in it, especially when it comes to actually, if you stick with Flashback.
Yeah, you think I should stick with it?
Because as I'm thinking about, like, and it's been a little while since I've read it, but the themes that come out really correlate to a lot of the conversations we've had about nostalgia and he gets at some really interesting things with that.
Okay.
But it's not as, I mean, like you said, you don't, you, when you texted me, you said you didn't like it as much. And my semi snarky response was, well, you read his best stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not, of course it's not as good.
Okay. That makes sense.
Of course it's not, you know, and I,
like you, if, when you read a good author, you just want everything they write to be great.
But you know, that's an interesting point because like I was thinking about this with filmmakers and some filmmakers don't make a lot of movies and they're all great. Like basically like Tarkovsky's the gold standard. The seven movies, seven.
Christopher Nolan in some ways. I know that you disagree about some of the recent ones, but
I love Christopher Nolan. I'm not going to put it in the same breath as Tarkovsky. Like not even close.
But for that comparison of most of his films are good.
Yeah. I mean, they're good, but I'm talking about like masterpieces. Ingmar Bergman, Seventh Seal, Persona, so many good stuff. A lot of crap.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot, like, because he would make sometimes multiple movies a year. There's a lot that he was spitting out that just wasn't that good. And then he would hit these masterpieces. Dan Simmons is somewhere in between. He's written very few books I would consider just bad. I'm trying to think if there's anything I just, there's a couple that I just didn't like. But most of them are really good. If you want something that's just completely different, his novel, The Crook Factory, which is a historical fiction novel about a anti-German U-boat spy ring that Ernest Hemingway ran out of Cuba during World War II. It's phenomenal. Really, really good. Yeah. I mean, his other great stuff outside of The Terror, which I thought you had read. You should read The Terror. But his other two that I would hold up as just masterpieces are both horror. So I don't think you'd like them.
Okay, listeners, I think that's all we have to say about these books, but I love them. My favorite reads of the year so far, and that's by a long shot. How about you? What's your favorite read of the year so far?
Ooh,
fiction. It could be a reread.
Say something else while I pull up my...
I looked at my own reviews on these just to see, is there any other notes? And I really was caught up on these other books. I just feel like, I know you said you could go in without having the other, like reading, for example, not having read Homer, but I feel like, man, I would have really suffered from not reading Homer first.
Yes. Favorite of the
year. Just fiction. Could be reread or first time.
Reread, I tend to leave out. So let's see. I finished up Jean Le Carre's George Smiley series. Those are good. I read Outer Dark by Cormac McCarthy. I love that.
Could it be Foe?
Foe was really good. Hangs a Man from Shirley Jackson.
Oh, sorry. Say that again.
Hangs a Man from Shirley Jackson, which the only reason I know it's a reread is because Goodreads told me it was. I had no memory of reading it, so I'm counting it as a first read.
I don't think we talked about Foe in this episode, but...
Not on this episode.
Yeah, Ben had just recently recommended to me a novel that he has recently read called Foe by, I'm looking this up, Ian Reid.
Yes.
So I think I might read that here in the next episode.
Know very little about it. I think you would like it.
Okay. It looks like, you know, as I pull up to purchase it on Audible, it looks like they're making this into a movie on Prime.
It was a movie. It has not been well received.
Oh, so you have not seen the movie yet?
No. Okay. The reviews were very bad.
All right, listeners. That's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
Bye.
We're the Stop Christian signing off.
I also like Deliverance a lot, which... Allegedly, we're going to be talking about something.
I just finished Jane Eyre, like in the last week.
But Jane Eyre was great, too. I love Jane Eyre.
And Deliverance comes after Jane Eyre.
All right.
I'm bringing them in order.
Sometimes the book feed, the book poster happens a lot right at once. Yes. Sometimes we have like a 6-month pause.
It hasn't been that long. We started
100%.
Okay, so let's just say that we review Deliverance in June. Let's just say. That means in the first 6 months, we'll have done 3 books. That's great. Why do you think that's funny? That's perfect.
There's yes, the average comes out that way, but it's a little bit, it's lumpy. That's all I'm saying.
I will say, you know, we're talking here about Ilium and Olympus. That's a big reason why I got behind.
That's true.
Because I'd started Jane Eyre and then was like, holy cow, Dan Simmons died.
Yeah.
I listened to his book, loved it. And then... So I had to finish those 2 books before I could go back to Jane Eyre.
Yeah, I understand.
So stop complaining. All right, listeners. Goodbye.
Goodbye.